It's time for the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle. Stay tuned as we discuss local and national sports from Southeast Missouri and beyond. The Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle is brought to you by Royal Retros. If you like cool throwback jerseys of defunct sports teams, Royal Retros is the place to buy. If you go to royalretros.com and you order with the code SPORTSDESK, all one word, you can get a little bit off your order. So check out Royal Retros. And now on with the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle.
And welcome back to the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle. I'm Mike Bueller, live from the cabin out north of Poplar Bluff.
I'm Mark Sanders in the control room at the Poplar Bluff Library, Gus Ridgel Branch.
And live from my bed in Webb City, Missouri, this is Kyle Roberts. I am tired.
And we have got a full show today. We are going to be joined in a little bit with by Poplar Bluff Wheels basketball coach Will Durden. But in the meantime, we are going to start off by talking about the end of high school football season here in Southeast Missouri. Hayti Indians and the Jackson Indians both played in the state semifinals this past weekend, and both of them lost. Jackson had a 28-14 lead in the third quarter at Lee Summit, but could not hold off a comeback by the Tigers and lost 35-28. And Hayti had a 16-7 lead at one point in their quarterfinal game against Putnam County, but could not stave off a devastating rushing attack by the visitors as Putnam County scored the game's last 40 points and ended up winning 53-22. Wow. Mark, what are your thoughts?
Well, my thoughts are the thing that's missing for most high school football teams is an effective defense, and that's what you see. That's what you see over and over again. You know, Jackson had a good defense, but we're not able. I think Jackson failed on both sides of the ball. The fact that they weren't able to score any points in the second half, and that they couldn't keep Lee Summit from making that comeback against them, and then Hayti. I mean, clearly, it just once their opponent got rolling, it was just a tsunami that wiped them out. You know, the game was no longer competitive at that point. So, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, Putnam County racked up over 450 yards rushing against Hayti. I thought that really popped out. They had a running back, I think, that had over 270 yards rushing. Jackson game, what was really devastating for Jackson in that game is they had a lead late in the game. I think they were leading late in the fourth quarter by one point, and they turned the ball over, and Lee Summit took it down and ended up scoring the game-winning touchdown off of. That is an absolutely brutal way for a team to lose. I know that's probably going to haunt those guys for a while.
Yeah, you know, and turnovers, you can survive turnovers in the regular season against lesser or even equal opponents. When you're playing, you know, once you get to the Final Four, the Missouri State playoffs, you know, you're playing the best of the best. And so mistake-free football is absolutely essential, or you're just not going to make it over the top.
It is. And, you know, this brings an end to high school football season here in Southeast Missouri. It was an interesting year. The things that stood out the most to me, Jackson, you know, was unbelievably dominant this year. They got those two big wins early, you know, kind of gave them the momentum to, you know, roll all the way to the state Final Four. Hayti stood out. You know, they struggled in the middle of the season when J.C. Ford, the quarterback, was hurt. But once he got back, they really stepped it up and started playing tough again. You know, I thought, you know, Crothersville had a great running back in Sammy Bryant. One thing that also impressed me among teams a little closer here to Poplar Bluff is I thought the Donovan Dons had a great year. You know, they had, you know, since resurrecting the program in 2018, their varsity team had only racked up four wins coming into the season, and they had four wins just this season alone. You know, that's a pretty nice leap forward. You know, had a chance possibly to win another game, maybe even two. You know, that's, you know, I feel like this program may have taken a really nice step forward, you know, and it's going to be interesting to see what them and other teams do. I thought Dexter, you know, really impressed this year. You know, they graduated a lot from last season, and they were every bit as good this season, if not better, in spite of that. You know, what Chad Jamerson's got going over there is pretty legit. Mark, what stood out to you this season?
Well, you know, obviously from local standpoint, you know, the Mules are getting off to slow starts at the beginning of seasons, and hopefully that's something that they can address going forward in the future. You know, starting off 0-4, 0-5, I mean, it's just really hard to bounce back from that. I did appreciate that once again they were playing better toward the end of the season, but I'd like to see them get off to a better start, even if it's scheduling a couple of cupcakes early on, you know, just so that you can build that that winning culture locally. excuse me. I do think that Dexter's finish was disappointing. I think the fact that they were only able to manage 6 points against Lift for Life, you know, work needs to be done there. I think Haytai's season has to be seen as a success, you know, especially since they had that low point in the middle of the season. They started off fast and then lost several games that they weren't even competitive in. And for them to make it to the Final Four, I think, is a terrific accomplishment. So, you know, if I had to pick out of all of our Southeast Missouri teams, you know, who had maybe not the best season, but I would say the most satisfying season considering expectations, I think that that would definitely be the Haytai Indians. I think that in terms of disappointment, we definitely have to put Jackson just ahead of Dexter. And I also would have liked to have seen Farmington do better in the playoffs. Farmington had a great regular season, but then fell short in the sectionals. So, you know, good things happening, but more work to be done for these programs if we want to bring a state football championship here to Southeast Missouri.
You bring up some good points. One thing that is worth mentioning with Dexter, Lift for Life ended up winning their state semifinal game after beating Dexter. Lift for Life's playing for the state title this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, so that's no surprise, but I mean, you know how it is. You know, you've been following Raiders basketball for some time now, Mike, and you know that for the past couple of years, the Lady Raiders have been knocked out in the national tournament by the team that went on to win the championship. And I mean, maybe the first time you're at the big dance, that can be some sort of consolation, but just when it happens again and again, it's like, man, if we can just get past this one team, you know. And it's usually a matter of, especially in basketball, a matter of just a few points. If we can just get past this one team, we could win it all. And so that's what you have to do. You have to look inside yourself and analyze your talent and your game plan. And it's like, how do we take this program to the next level? And if that's your goal, you know, if your goal is just to go out and have fun and give the kids something to do, you could do that too. But, you know, generally, as Herm Edwards so famously said, you play to win the game.
And that's a good point. And speaking of the Raiders and Lady Raiders, the Raiders, you know, seem like they may be getting a little bit of momentum. Of course, we're taking this on Wednesday before the Raiders game at Shawnee on Wednesday night. But they are going. They went into that game with a four-game winning streak because they swept the Bank of Brandon Thanksgiving tournament for the first time in 10 years. You know, got, you know, three double-digit victories, beat Wabash Valley by 11. You know, team that had beat them earlier despite only playing eight guys. And then before that, they beat Northeast Oklahoma for the first time in 4 years. And before that, they beat an East Mississippi team that came into this tournament with just one loss. You know, the men are not home yet, but they are coming out of December 8-4, you know, and that's not a bad achievement considering the schedule they've played.
I think 8-4 is a great schedule. I mean, 8-4 is a great record at this point. I was going to ask you if your friends who were complaining about the team had decided to quiet down after this. A four-game winning streak is nothing to sneeze at, especially that win over Wabash.
They have quieted down some. There are some people in the fan base that you can go 40-0 and win every game by 20 points. And the day after you win the championship, they're going to be complaining about how many people you're graduating or going into free agency.
Yeah, those people should not be considered. Those people should not have a voice, okay? Because that's ridiculous. You know, that's a person who just wants to find something to complain about.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I know that, you know, in addition to playing at Shawnee, you know, on Wednesday night, you know, after we tape, the Raiders are headed down to Northeast Mississippi next weekend to play, I believe, a prep school and to take on the host Tigers. And then they wrap up the pre-holiday version, section of their schedule at John A. Logan on December 16th. You know, that's going to be an interesting match. It would be nice to see the Raiders go into the new year with, you know, they're 8-4 right now. It'd be nice to see them win at least three of these remaining games, you know, including Shawnee, if not sweep them. I'm not saying that will happen, but it would be nice.
No, it would be great because once we get into January, January is all Region 16 games, home at Moberly, yeah. On the road at State Fair, and then two in a row at home against Mineral Area and Missouri State West Plains. So, you know, this is when the real season starts, when you're playing your regional foes.
Yeah, it is. Switching gears a bit to the Lady Raiders, they went 2-1 last week. Of course, they played John A. Logan last Monday and got a nice win in that. Then they went to Athens, Texas, down to Trinity Valley to play in a 2-day tournament down there. Beat Panola pretty convincingly on the day after Thanksgiving. Suffered their first loss of the year in a rematch at Trinity Valley this past Saturday. Lost that game by 15. They had beaten Trinity Valley up there, so that was not a big surprise. The Lady Raiders are still ranked in the top 10. I believe they are at John A. Logan Saturday. Then they come home Monday and play National Park College, a Division II junior college out of Hot Springs.
Yeah, I'm looking at the
wrap up this year by going back at wrap up 2025 by going to Tuscaloosa next weekend to play in that tournament, which is always a good tournament.
Yeah,
but, you know, it's been up and down. They haven't been dominating as much as they did last year, but they've been finding ways to win.
Well, it's also, you know, there's not a lot of carryover from last year to this year. I believe they only have just a couple of returning starters, if that. One of the players that they have returning is Australian Caitlin Lord, who missed most, if not all, of last season with injuries. So glad to see her come back. I'm looking at the box score for their loss at Trinity Valley. I mean, it was really just a terrible third quarter in which they got outscored 22-4. That was really the difference in that. They were within range. They were within range in the rest of that. But, I would just chalk that up to it's the Saturday after Thanksgiving and you've been on the road for like 3 or 4 days. It's unrealistic to think that this Lady Raiders team is will or even should have gone undefeated this season. You can learn a lot about who you are and how you play as a team through those key losses, you know.
Agreed.
But, yeah, I expect to see them to bounce back here in December. And just like the men, I think that they should be well-positioned for their Region 16 matchups coming up in January.
I do, too. And before we go to a break, I'm going to switch gears one more time. Talk a little bit about high school basketball. That's getting started. Of course, they had the Kern River Challenge over at Van Buren this past weekend, which is always a nice tournament. And, you know, a couple of area tournaments have gotten geared up this week. Bernie hosts a really nice tournament. A couple of games stood out in that Tuesday night. Risco and Neelyville played a barn burner and ended up, I think Risco ended up winning that one pretty close. And then Bloomfield came into the tournament as a 7 seed and upset number 2 seed Portageville 52-42. That's a pretty pretty nice win for Bloomfield.
Yeah, yeah.
Then over at Orion, Bell City got a really dominant win on Monday night against, I believe it was Scott County Central. And then on Tuesday night, a couple of minor upsets. Fifth seed of Richland edged out number 4 seed Kelly, and then 6 seed of Advance beat number 3 Westwood Baptist 58-45. Westwood Baptist led that game 45-44 in the fourth quarter, and Advance closed that game on a 14-0 run. You know, that's a pretty nice, you know, that Advance program has really struggled the last couple of years, and to get a nice opening night win over Westwood Baptist, you know, that could be, you know, something they've needed.
And it's interesting to see that Westwood Baptist, which, if any of you don't know, they are a private Christian school here in Poplar Bluff, and they've had a lot of success in, I guess you would call it, it's like a class one Christian school bracket. They've won several championships, only competing against other Christian schools. And now it looks like they are expanding their scope to take on some public schools also. And again, I'm going to say benefiting from a loss. You know, if you're in a class or a division where you're just dominating all the time, and it's like, hey, let's see how good we really are, you know, and then you take on some different competition, it's like, okay, we're not winning games by 30 or 40 points anymore. You know, we're actually losing games. But again, I think that's how a program grows. You know, you see where your weak points are, and then you address them, and then you move forward. So, you know, compliments to Westwood Baptist on, you know, being willing to expand their program.
Agreed. And, you know, there's still a lot of good high school basketball. Papa Bluff is hosting the SEMO Conference Girls Basketball Tournament. Kenny got a nice win over Sykeston last night. Notre Dame beat Dexter. I can't remember the other score off the top of my head. When I say last night, I mean Tuesday night. Now, that's going to be going on the rest of this week. Donovan's got the River City Classic going on the rest of this week. So there's a lot of good high school basketball this week. There's going to be more next week with Sykeston hosting the SEMO Conference Boys Basketball Tournament. So we're getting to that time of the year. You're going to be hearing a lot more of that here on the Sports Desk. And we are going to take a break. And when we come back, we will be joined by Papa Bluff Mills Boys Basketball Coach Will Durden here on the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle.
This is Three Rivers Men's Basketball Coach Robert Kirby, and you are listening to the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle.
And we are back on the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle. I'm Mike Bueller, and joining me now is Poplar Bluff Basketball Coach Will Durden. Coach, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on. I'm kind of excited to talk about some basketball stuff.
And you guys are starting up Monday, and you're diving right into it by starting right up in the SEMO Conference Basketball Tournament. Tell me about that.
You know, it's always an interesting tournament. I mean, I think we have one of the toughest conferences in the state, and, you know, it's kind of hard to see this early because, you know, you really don't know. I mean, there's a lot of times that, you know, a lower seed will advance pretty far in the tournament. So, you know, it's a good tournament to see where you're at the beginning of the year.
It is. And who do you guys open with?
We open with Jackson.
Ooh, that's always a good one. What are your thoughts on
yeah,
that?
Yeah. I mean, they're always tough. They're a well-coached team. I mean, their athletic program's been rolling the last few years. I mean, they had a great year last year. They lost a couple kids, but, you know, they bring back a really good big kid. So, you know, it'd be interesting with their football kids, you know, just being able to practice now. You know, they'll definitely be a lot better midseason, but they're going to be a tough out.
I agree. And tell me a little bit about the guys you have back.
Well, I mean, I have a lot of experience coming back, whether that translates or not. We've, you know, had some really good practices. I really enjoy this group. They work hard. They communicate well, and they're just kind of a joy to coach right now. So, you know, a lot of times that may not translate into a win, but man, it feels good going home after, you know, coaching a group like this.
Good deal. Do you have any idea who may be starting for you coming up?
I mean, it's still kind of up in the air. Like I said, we have a lot of kind of experience coming back. I mean, we lost four kids from last year's team, two starters, our leading scorer, but, you know, we bring back, you know, a majority of our scoring other than that guy, and most of our rebounding. So, you know, we have a lot coming back as far as starting. I mean, it's, you know, it'll kind of be a mismatch of things depending on who we play.
Sounds good. And you've got some pretty interesting games coming up this season. I believe you're going back to the Route 66 shootout. Tell me about that.
Well, we start that shootout with Capital City. They got a kid coming back that's ranked pretty high in Missouri, 6'8", 6'9", kid, really good. We played them last year and lost one pretty late, and they're bringing back their entire team. So, you know, again, our schedule is just as tough as it has been in years past, and, you know, we just got to embrace it and compete.
You've also got the Powerlift Showdown coming up on the 29th. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's, again, it's a great tournament to be in. I mean, we're, you know, we start the season pretty heavy with tournaments. You know, we have the SEMO Conference, then the Showdown, and then we go out to Joplin and play in that. But, you know, the Showdown's always been tough. You know, we got some good teams coming in. Linkier is bringing one of their groups over. Jonesboro, who's won the tournament multiple times, they're coming back this year. So, you know, we have, you know, some great competition. It's a joy just to, you know, after your game or before your game, watch some of the other team play and try to pick, you know, those coaches' brains while they're here. And then, you know, they watch them, how they progress in the season. You know, most of the teams we have here go pretty deep in their playoffs. So it's always a good tournament to watch, and, you know, especially for the fans.
It is. And there's been some really cool names that have played in this tournament over the years. You know, Devin Booker's played in it. Anthony Peeler, that played many years with the Lakers, he's played in it. William Avery, who played on some legendary Duke teams back in the 90s, he was in it. R.W. McCorders, that went on to play in the NFL with the 49ers, he was in it. It's, you know, and I may be leaving somebody out, but that's just an impressive roster. I mean, you never know who you're going to see in this tournament. Let me see here. And you said you were going out to Joplin, I believe, in January. Tell me about that.
You know, a tournament we got in probably 4 or 5 years ago. Maybe, you know, I don't know, everything starts running together, but maybe it's a, you know, a chance to go and play over in Southwest Missouri against some teams that, you know, we usually don't get to see. You know, Webb City's out there, and Joplin, and usually sometimes Jefferson City's in it. So, you know, it's, you know, nice part of the state, different refereeing, you know, different time for kids, you know, so, and it's good competition. So it's been good. You know, it's usually a team bonding for us. It comes pretty quick. You know, our kids are usually pretty tired after coming off the Showdown, but, you know, it's been a good tournament for us to go to.
It has. And last but not least, what does this team need to do to win a district title this year?
We just need to be solid on defense, and honestly, we need to rebound a lot better than what we did last year. I mean, you know, we kind of got hit with the injury bug midseason last year, and our rebounding, our production went down quite a bit. You know, we played decent on defense, but we just couldn't close out of a possession because, you know, we would give up a rebound. So I think if we rebounded better and we're still solid on D, then, you know, this team could be, you know, decently successful.
And there you go. And that is Popper Bluff Mules basketball coach Will Durden here on the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle.
This is Three Rivers College women's basketball coach Alex Wiggs, and you are listening to the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle.
And we are back on the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle, and we are getting ready to do our weekly dive into the National Football League. And I am going to start off by talking about the worst team in the NFL, the Tennessee Titans. That is my team, even if they do stink. But we do have a little bit of something to get excited about. And when you're desperate to find something to get excited about, even a little something is, you can cling to it. And we're going, and what I'm clinging to as a Titans fan this week is that we are going to the dog pound to take on Shedeur Sanders and the Cleveland Browns in a matchup of what was two of the best college quarterbacks in football in this past season, you know, last season. It's going to be interesting. I don't think it's going to be pretty, but I think it's going to be interesting. I think the ugly is going to come in when Myles Garrett absolutely destroys our weak left tackle and does unspeakable harm to Cam Ward. Hopefully something bad doesn't happen to Cam Ward in that game. Meanwhile, the Titans defense is going to have the challenge of stopping Quinshon Judkins and Shedeur Sanders. You know, that's going to be a fun matchup to watch. You know, I know some people don't like Sanders. I like Shedeur Sanders. I want to see him win, if nothing else, because I want to see this Browns team finally quit being, you know, quit battling the Titans to be the dregs of the NFL.
Well, I want to see the Browns win because that that potentially raises the Vikings' draft position. I'm hoping that they will get at least a top 10 or maybe a top 5 even draft pick, especially if they lose out for the rest of the season, which is a definite possibility, especially if J.J. McCarthy keeps playing the way that he has. But since you mentioned Cam Ward, and I just mentioned J.J. McCarthy, I think that it's long past time for the NFL to do something different with their quarterbacks, okay? It is completely unrealistic to expect that even a talented college quarterback, you know, even you know, look at the 24 draft. Cam Ward, or excuse me, I'm looking at Cam Ward's stats now. Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May. All three of those quarterbacks had terrible first seasons. Now, Williams is looking better. Drake May's looking like MVP, but he was probably the pick of the litter. Jaden Daniels is hurt. Bo Nix is very limited in what he's able to do. He's riding the strength of a defense. J.J. McCarthy is a historically bad quarterback to this time. And this, I think, is a potential solution. And you guys tell me what you think about this. Let's exempt quarterbacks from the rest of the salary cap. Have a separate salary cap category for your quarterback.
I could see that.
You know, and put a cap on, you know, put a, you know, say like you put a cap $60 million. That's the most that you can pay a quarterback, but then you have a separate cap for the rest of your roster, because what we have in the NFL right now, I mean, and you can see it with two of the best quarterbacks in the league, with Josh Allen and Joe Burrow. Both of those players have incredibly expensive contracts, which prohibits the team from putting a quality team around them. Buffalo has, other than James Cook III, they have no talent on offense in terms of their skill players. Dalton Kincaid's a good tight end, but he's hurt right now. But they definitely don't have a number one receiver. And, of course, in Cincinnati, T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase are taking up pretty much the rest of that team's salary cap. They only have one decent player on defense. And I think that if you could actually separate the quarterback's salary from the salary cap of the rest of the team, that would enable teams to go out and sign high-quality quarterbacks to long-term contracts. Now, that would still come out of the owner's pocket, but, you know, treat it the way that they pay their coaching staff. You know, their coaching staff doesn't count against the player's salary cap. And it's, I think it's necessary to do this because the quarterback position has become so essential and so specialized. You know, if you think back to the 80s and even the 90s, you know, an average quarterback could win you a Super Bowl. But I mean, how long ago was it that Trent Dilfer was the quarterback for the Ravens that won the Super Bowl? What was that, 2005?
25 years.
2000. Exactly. Yeah. You know, and look at the past Super Bowls. You know, look at the quarterbacks who have won the Super Bowls in the past 10 years. I mean, you know, it's three names: Tom Brady, Patrick Mahomes, and Jalen Hurts. And that's it. That's all you get.
Yeah, it's a pain in the butt for teams that once the because the
the market, average market for quarterbacks is so much higher than every other position on the field. So I absolutely get where you're coming from there. And honestly, I've never heard that take before. So it really has me thinking. But when you look at teams, and not just mentioning Cincinnati and Buffalo, you look at a team like Baltimore. Now, Baltimore's fortunate that they have such an excellent track record in drafting and player development that they can offset a situation like Buffalo, where they are completely dependent on Josh Allen. Cincinnati is damn near completely dependent on Joe Burrow.
Right.
But we've seen, for example, what the Ravens look like without Lamar Jackson, despite the roster that's been built.
Right.
So I actually like that idea.
Yeah, and the other thing that it would afford, it would give you time to draft a quarterback in the first round and then do what the Packers, I hate to give praise to the Packers, but they're the only team that properly develops quarterbacks. They draft them late in the first round, and then they sit them for 3 or 4 years until they're ready to succeed. And so we saw that, you know, Aaron Rodgers came in and succeeded Brett Favre, and then Jordan Love took over after Aaron Rodgers. Now, for the Packers, they've also had, you know, the sticky situation of massively egotistical starting quarterbacks who did not want to train their understudy to take their job. But that's just the way of the world. You know, Father Time is undefeated, and eventually you have to move on. But I would think that this would definitely be on your mind, Kyle, because I can definitely envision a situation where if Matthew Stafford stays healthy to the end of the year and is able to lead the Rams to another Super Bowl victory, I can see him riding off into the sunset. And then the question for LA is, who's our next quarterback?
Yeah, that actually leads into a thought I have, that we own Atlanta's first round pick next year, and I need the Falcons to lose as much as possible. All respect and love to the Rise Up Nation, but I'd be using that first round pick on a quarterback next year, and hopefully can either get a guy high, or we can use that pick as leverage, move down, get more picks, and still get a quarterback that we can develop. But to me, the X factor in us with a rookie quarterback and some other teams, we have Sean McVay to develop and cultivate him.
Yeah, but it just doesn't matter. I mean, the most talented quarterback in the 24 draft was Drake May, and he did not look good his first season. I mean, if you commit to starting a rookie quarterback, I mean, you are going to have a down year by definition. There's just, Jaden Daniels was a unicorn. I mean, the season that he had, and part of that was the benefit of a last place schedule. You know, it's like they did not have a tough schedule last season, and that easy schedule gave him time to develop, and, he caught fire toward the end of the season. Very entertaining. The problem is, I mean, if he is not giving Washington fans, deja vu about Robert Griffin III, it's just like, you know, here you've got this kid with all of the talent and the speed in the world, but he's not very big and he's not looking like he's going to be very durable, you know, and the Commanders may find themselves in a position in a not too distant future where they're going to have to look to replace him at QB because he just can't physically play anymore.
It's such a pain in the butt, but to tie back to you guys, Mike, Cleveland wins, and I'm incredibly sorry. Myles Garrett may break the sack record this Sunday.
I've already thought that.
That's awful.
Yeah.
That is awful.
Considering the tackle he's going to be going up against Dan Moore, he's got a pretty good chance to do it. On a happier note, Mark, you guys play the Washington Commanders Sunday, and that's you know, I know you may not agree, but that's a winnable game, and I actually think Minnesota's going to beat these guys.
Oh, I'm not picking Minnesota to win another game this season. I've already selected the Commanders to win. Marcus Mariota is a veteran quarterback. You know, he availed himself really well on Monday night against Denver. You know, if it wasn't for just an insane defensive play on Denver's part, Washington probably upsets them in that game. The Vikings are an absolute garbage fire this season. I mean, nothing is working for them. And I don't care what they do. I don't see J.J. McCarthy coming out and playing well enough to score enough points to win this game. I think that the Vikings defense will probably hold Washington to somewhere between 14 to 17 points. I can see that happen, but I also see them winning 17 to 9 because J.J. McCarthy, sorry to say it, really disappointed. You know, all of the hype surrounding him through spring and summer and the training camp and everything, and all of the media, both local and national, who was, you know, it wasn't just the Tribune writers in Minneapolis. It wasn't just Purple Daily. I mean, it was Kevin Seifert from ESPN, you know, at training camp saying, man, McCarthy really looks good. He really looks like the real thing. Well, sorry, practice is not the same as real life games in the NFL. And I think I think that Kevin O'Connell has broken J.J. McCarthy physically. Now, he may still have the will to do it. He's like, I'm not going to quit, you know, and following the footsteps of players like Sam Darnold and Baker Mayfield, you know, who started off terrible but eventually, you know, had successful careers. But I think just in his ability to run KOC's offense effectively, I think it's just in his head. It's like, oh, look, you know, Justin Jefferson's wide open. I've got to get the pass here, and he overthinks it. And, you know, and it's like a golfer with the yips. You know, when you go up to the ball, and it's like, all right, don't slice it, don't slice it, don't slice it. You slice it off into the woods every time. I think that's where McCarthy's head is right now.
Do you think JJ's confidence, like you said, with the yips, is just completely shot?
You know, I hope not. Let's look and see. This is a winnable game, so let's look and see how he plays. And let's see if KOC puts him in a position to succeed. You know, like maybe call a slant pass for once in your damn life, okay? How about a quick slant? Can we do that? Is that in your incredibly complex playbook, or do we have to throw everything 40 yards downfield?
Also, whenever you have 2 yards a game, could you fall forward and run the ball?
No, he won't do that. He's incapable of doing that.
Every damn week.
Yeah, and I don't think his job is safe, especially if they don't win another game this season. I think the entire front office is going to be sacked, you know, because if you do get a great draft pick, do you really want Kwesi making that pick? Or trading it away for a bag of magic beans? If I was the owner, I wouldn't trust Kwesi going into another draft because he's failed 4 times in a row. I also don't trust the ownership to find a decent general manager. It's like, hire somebody from Philadelphia. It's like, whoever is on Howie Roseman's staff is like, find Howie Roseman's like top lieutenant. Who's his right-hand man? Go and hire him. Give him $20 million a year to come and fix this team.
You don't have enough Georgia Bulldogs on your roster. That's the problem. That's all the Eagles do. It's so easy.
Yes. It's just, oh, you play defense for Georgia. Come and play with us. Thank you.
Hey, let me say this real quick, guys. You know, I wouldn't be too quick to give up on J.J. McCarthy yet. I mean, I say this because it's one of the things I think that's really gotten to be a big problem in the NFL is teams don't have the patience to develop quarterbacks anymore. That's why you see guys like Baker Mayfield and Sam Darnold leaving the organizations that drafted them and developing elsewhere, is that teams just give up on them too soon. I mean, it's like, you know, if they're not doing it in 1 year, then they're a bust. And that's not true. I mean, in the past, NFL teams would bear with a quarterback instead of being in win-now mode. And I wouldn't be too quick to give him McCarthy just yet. He struggled in his first year, but I still think he's got a chance. But we will see. Switching gears a bit to something very happy, the Los Angeles Rams are heading to Arizona to take on the Cardinals. I think they're going to win this game. Kyle, I'm going to let you talk about that.
It's the Arizona Cardinals. They're the LA Clippers of the NFL. which on an aside, screw the Clippers. I don't know if any of you guys are got the news very, very early in the morning, but they are ending the contract of Chris Paul, the future Hall, who is retiring at the end of the year, and the only reason in the last 15 years the Clippers have been relevant. Because they're the Los Angeles Clippers, but I digress. That's another story for another day. But this game is a get-back game for us because I thought we Carolina last week. You take a team like us with how we are constructed, how we play. We are a West Coast team. We're indoors, and it's very pass-oriented offense, and you take us at a three-hour time difference in a noon kickoff, and it's raining and against a team that runs the ball really well in Carolina, and that's a recipe for a trap. Plus, the Panthers, they're not out of it. They're fighting for the NFC South division lead.
Yeah, they're feisty.
They are tied with Carolina with Tampa right now, 7-6. So I was very worried with this game, and shockingly, Matthew Stafford threw two interceptions. I didn't know it was humanly possible this year. And one of them was a pick six. It turned out to be an excellent game. A major congratulations to Dave Canales and Bryce Young and all those boys. Ted McMillan is the real deal.
Oh, absolutely.
I gotta say. And even though we did lose, that catch Puka Nacua made, my freaking Lord.
Oh, by the way, I have to apologize for Stafford's performance. I put him back as my starting quarterback on my fantasy team because I thought Lamar has looked terrible. So I figured, oh, I can't go wrong with Stafford, so you can just blame me for that. I have the worst fantasy. I put the Lions in on defense, and they had like zero fantasy points against Green Bay. I mean, it's like Justin Jefferson, zero fantasy points. I mean, it's like my fantasy team couldn't possibly be worse. I should change my team's name to the JJ McCarthy's. I really should.
No, Mark. If you're gonna do it right, you gotta call them the Titans.
Good with the toilet bowl Titans, but with the Panthers, they played an awesome game, showed a lot of gumption, and Bryce Young is continuing to make strides. And you talked about patience. Carolina's been more patient with Bryce Young than some of their fans, I'm sure, would have been.
Is it
pretty every week? No, but I like the roster construction of Carolina. They didn't have a passing game last year. They didn't have weapons for him to throw to, so they draft Tet McMillan in the top 10, and he's turned out to be an excellent get. Rico Dowdle, they got him for nothing, and he's become one of the most productive running backs in the NFL. So I had valid concerns about this game, and we lost by a field goal, but again, I still feel very, very good about us. We go to Arizona. We play probably the only team that throws the ball more than we do, and that's Arizona. But they do it out of lack of running game. Jacoby Brissett, I mean, what was it, two games ago, set the single game record for completions, and I still lost.
Yeah.
My only concern is the fact that the Cardinals do have Trey McBride, who, why nobody talks about him as a top three tight end in the NFL. I have no clue.
Because he plays for Arizona.
He plays for the Cardinals. But he's an absolute stud. Catches everything, has excellent production. Marvin Harrison Jr. has made some big strides. There's pieces you know, with the Cardinals to concern ourselves with. But at the end of the day, we're going to handle our business and we'll come back and we'll be 10-3 and at first and still in first in the NFC West. And an aside to our friend Scott Borchgren, who I'm sure is still coping with this reality that for the first time in 19 years at this point, the Chicago Bears are the NFC's number one seed.
Deservedly so. Oh, did you see that game? They went into Philadelphia and they out-eagled the Eagles. They beat the Eagles at their own game.
Wow.
Yeah, it was.
The Chicago Bears are legit.
Yeah, they are legit, and it's clear when you see the decline of the Lions this season that they really missed Ben Johnson. He was the secret sauce on offense. I think he was a bigger loss than the holes that opened up on their offensive line. You know, because Goff still plays well. Their running backs are still good, but boy, they're missing Johnson and his scheme. And you know, if you're a Bears fan, you should believe, because that team believes. That team is going into every game believing that they're going to win, and they have momentum going into the end of this season. They're going to go into Lambeau and beat the Packers this weekend. I'm calling it today. They're going to beat the Packers this weekend.
No, I absolutely have them beating Green Bay, and it is because the core of this team is young, especially on the offensive side of the ball. And you know, Caleb Williams, DeAndre Swift, Kyle Manongai, who was a late round pick, a running back out of Rutgers. Which, if you want good production out of a running back in the late rounds, you get them from Rutgers. DJ Moore, wide receiver, you have Cole Kmet, Colston Loveland. They have a good tight end duo. And like everything is coming along. Plus, the Bears lead the NFL in turnover margin.
Manongai, I consider Manongai Cam Scadaboo's little brother. He plays just like him, which is, where's a wall for me to run through? I'll use my head.
Literally. it's a different breed of running back that every team needs. But he and DeAndre Swift run the ball. The Bears are first in the league in rushing yards. And it's not like they have anybody. They have a single feature back to make it happen. Caleb Williams is capable with his legs. A big get for the Bears defense was Kevin Byard. He's been a ball hawk all season for Chicago's secondary. But yes, the Bears are actually legit. And if they finish out as the top seed, this will be the second time in my life this has happened.
I know.
Because I was born 2 years after the 85 Bears. And the only time they've been the number one seed was 2006. You know what happened that year? They went to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, they went to the Super Bowl and they lost to Peyton Manning. So
because Rex Grossman's your quarterback,
right? Obviously. Well, this Thursday is good. Now, usually Thursday night football, you just don't even have to bother to find a friend with an Amazon Prime account. But you'll want to do that this weekend. The Dallas Cowboys, the resurgent. Got a defense, can't stop their offense. How about them Cowboys at 6-5-1 are going to the Motor City to take on the declining Detroit Lions. So we've got one team on the rise and another team that is desperate to keep their playoff hopes alive. After seeing Dallas beat the Chiefs, I'm a believer. I'm taking the Cowboys over the Lions on Thursday night.
I did not think Brian Schottenheimer was going to do a good job with this team solely based off of his reputation as an offensive coordinator. But Dak Prescott statistically is the best quarterback in the NFL this year. He just has a bad defense statistically weighing him down. However, Dallas is improving on defense.
With Matt Eberflus as their coordinator. Matt Eberflus is their coordinator, and he's got that defense playing really well.
Please explain, because we saw the terrorism that man committed coaching the Bears.
Yeah, agreed.
And I'll tell you, hold on a second.
Lightning round. I'm going to go ahead and just shoot off my picks real quick. I'm going to pick Detroit to win that game. I'm going to buck the tide a little bit. I am going to take the Seahawks to go to Atlanta and win. I am taking the Browns over the Titans. Imagine that. I have got Minnesota beating Washington.
Wrong.
I am taking the Dolphins to go to the Meadowlands and beat the Jets. I am taking the Buccaneers at home over New Orleans. I am taking the Jaguars at home over the Colts, the Ravens at home over the Steelers. I am taking Buffalo to beat Cincinnati in Buffalo. I am taking Denver to go to Vegas and win, taking the Bears over the Packers at Lambeau. I am taking the Rams over the Cardinals in Arizona. I am taking the Chiefs to bounce back at home against the Texans. And I am taking the Chargers in Los Angeles to beat the Eagles.
All right, Kyle, you ready? Let's go back over this.
Yeah. All right. All right. So, run them down for me.
Okay. So I've already told you that I'm picking the Cowboys over the Lions, but the real eye opener for the Cowboys is Jadeveon Clowney. You know, yeah. It's like seeing his resurgence with the defense. I mean, he was all over Mahomes. It's like Mahomes couldn't accomplish all of the Mahomey tricks because Clowney was just right in his face every time. He was unblockable.
And you know what? This is the 11th year in the league. I am, however, in this game, I'm taking Detroit very close. They are extremely desperate. Mm-hmm. Dallas has a lot of momentum. Detroit's got to get back. And it's going to be lower scoring than what everyone's anticipating, which is a complete shootout. But I'm taking Detroit to skate by Dallas.
Yeah, I'm going to disagree with you there. I think Dallas has a better offense than does Green Bay, and Green Bay was able to score at will against Detroit on Thanksgiving. So we'll see how that pairs out. Seattle's going to beat Atlanta. Are you gonna argue with me about
completely,
that?
Completely. Listen, yeah. It was nice to see Kirk Cochane's come back, but listen, that man has much arm strength as I do. DeMarcus Lawrence is, and that defense is going to harass him to hell.
Yeah,
and yeah, Seattle wins.
Any chance Tennessee is able to beat Cleveland on the road?
Tennessee couldn't beat Vanderbilt or Memphis in football right now.
Are you going to make the same mistake that Mike has made and pick the Vikings to beat the Commanders?
No, I'm picking Washington. After the game they played against that Denver defense, Washington is – they're such a proud team. And they're playing against everything that's gone wrong against them this year. I got Washington winning. Mariota is very capable.
Yep.
And I just think they're going to grit their teeth and they're going to win that game.
Yeah. I think the Jets are going to beat the Dolphins. The Dolphins stink in cold weather. I don't know if there's going to be any rain or snow, but you know it's going to be cold in Jersey this weekend. So I think the Jets are going to win a low-scoring game.
Neither team knows how to properly tank. The Dolphins should be completely tanking, but you know what? Screw it. I'm picking the Jets too.
All
because
right.
We've seen what Tua looks like in the cold.
Yep. Yep. I'm taking the Bucks over the Saints. Tampa's got Bucky Irving back. And so they're going to walk away with that one
easily.
The Colts, unfortunately for Daniel Jones, he's trying to gut out playing with a broken leg. Obviously, it's a crack in his fibula, lower leg bone. If it was, you know, snapped in half, he wouldn't be playing. But his mobility is limited. Jacksonville is rolling. Nobody's talking about Jacksonville, but Trevor Lawrence looks like the first-round pick that was promised to us several years ago.
Jacksonville, this game is for first place in the AFC South.
I know.
And yeah, nobody's making mention of that. Daniel Jones is a warrior. It is awesome that he's trying to play gut through this for his team. It's too much. Jacksonville's running game and their defense is going to wear in a low scoring game, but they're going to beat the Colts.
Baltimore at home wins, I don't know what, 6-3, 9-6 over the Steelers.
Remember when people used to look forward to the back alley brawls of the Ravens and Steelers?
What's wrong with Lamar? Is he still hurt? Is he just playing hurt? Is that the problem?
I think he's playing hurt, and Baltimore's just playing very snug to the chest to preserve him. But that Steelers roster is awful. You know they have the highest their defense. They're the most expensive defense in the NFL.
Yes,
and they're dead last in pass defense.
Yeah, yeah. Derrick Henry aged faster than that guy in Indiana Jones and the Holy Grail who picked the wrong cup.
Oof. Rough.
Buffalo wins at home against Cincinnati. I don't care if Joe Burrow is back. Buffalo is playing for their playoff lives, and they know they're only going to get a few more swings at the pinata until either Josh Allen is too old to play, and I know he's still in his prime, but eventually the way their salary cap is constructed, they're going to have to blow up this team for a couple of seasons. Like this,
they absolutely will have to. The Buffalo needs pieces in their front seven. They can't stop the run, and they do not have a viable number one receiving option for Josh Allen.
Yeah. What they need to do, they need to go to him. They need to go to him and ask him to restructure his contract. It's like, Josh, we want to put some players around you, but you're taking up a third of our salary cap. You got to help us out here. It's like, your wife makes a lot of money, so, you know. Denver's going to murder the Raiders. The Raiders aren't even a professional football team anymore.
No.
You know, if I was Max Crosby, I would have demanded a trade at the trade deadline. It's like, trade me to a professional team that actually has a chance of winning this season.
The best football team in the state of Nevada is UNLV running Rebs.
All right. You and I have both already picked the Bears over the Packers and the Rams over the Cardinals. Let's talk about the Chiefs. We know that Houston has the best defense in the league. Can Kansas City at home overcome that enough? Can they score enough points in what's probably going to be a low scoring game to outlast the Texans?
This is an absolute pick 'em because both teams need these wins. And you are looking at Kansas City as a top five defense. Houston is the number one defense. Rashee Rice had a monster game against Dallas. He's not doing that again against Derek Stingley Jr.
Yeah.
The Texans generate so much pressure with Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson up front. This is a talk. You know what? I got KC at home simply because I can't buy Davis Mills going into Arrowhead and doing it. The Texans offense is, their running game is so bereft.
Yeah.
You have a past his prime Nick Chubb, Woody Marks. It's not enough. And the receiving core is solid, but you're asking Davis Mills to beat Patrick Mahomes in a must-win situation. I take KC in a game that might have, as legendary wrestling announcer Jim Ross would say, bowling shoe tendencies. In the wrestling business, we call ugly matches bowling shoe ugly.
Yeah.
This might be a bowling shoe ugly football game.
And I think it's going to come down to turnovers. You know, I think whichever team turns over the ball the most, because, I mean, you know, sudden changes in short fields, I think, are going to make the difference in this game. And I agree, it's going to be a field goal on one side or the other. It's going to be the margin of victory. But
easily,
Kansas City,
and another factor for that game is Kansas City has to shorten the field, and they've got to score early because of their. And they might need to take score and try a couple of big shots because of their inability to finish drives this year.
Well, if they can jump out to say like a 2-touchdown lead, you know, they come out and, you know, get up 14-0. You're basically at that point, you're forcing Davis Mills to pass on pretty much every down, and then you can send Chris Jones and Carl Loftus into the backfield with just no limitations, and that will spell trouble.
We always know the Houston Texans offensive line has always been an Achilles heel.
Exactly. Wrapping up with the Monday night game, Philly's lost two in a row. They're not going to lose three in a row. And there's no way the Eagles, especially as banged up as the Chargers are, they don't have an offensive line. Justin Herbert finds a way to injure himself in a different and creative way practically every week. I think Philly wins a low-scoring game on Monday night.
And bless the Chargers' hearts. You're asking this line without Rashawn Slater and without Joe Alt to face that Eagles defensive line.
Good grief. Jalen Carter should be registered as a lethal weapon.
The words "I beg your damn pardon" come to mind when you look at the O-line of the Chargers. Like, one Jordan Davis by himself. This is domestic terrorism that may happen to Justin Herbert, who's a big tough dude. But you have all that talent on the Eagles defensive line, and I think they're going to finally be able to run the ball and establish the line and win a game that if the Chargers were at full health, this would be a really dang good matchup. But I think that with all the injuries and the fact that the Eagles are not, I don't think they're going to lose three in a row despite how they've looked this year. I got Philly winning.
No. All right, let's take a quick look at the playoffs. In the AFC, here are your top seven seeds in order. New England, Denver, Jacksonville, Baltimore. They're your division leaders, your three wild cards. The Chargers, Indianapolis, and Buffalo. So who out of those seven is not going to make the playoffs?
Mike, who do you think, man?
That's a good question. I think Buffalo is better than they've been playing. I like them in Denver. I'm not convinced New England's going to win the AFC. That's a good question. I like the Jags to win that division. Colts could end up on the outside looking in. I mean, especially, you know, this Daniel Jones injury may end up biting them harder than people think, so it could be them.
Yeah, that's my pick. That's my pick. I'm taking out Indy, and I think Kansas City's going to run the table and get in as a seventh seed. Until they lose, I'm sticking with my story.
No. Stick to your story. You're wrong, and you should feel bad for your story.
Well, you know, Houston can knock them out of the playoffs this Sunday. If Kansas City loses, they're out. You know, you're not going to get in at 10-7. You're not going to get in at 10-7. Not with Chargers. See, because Chargers, Indy, Buffalo, they're all sitting at 8 wins. All three of those teams are going to win at least 2 more games this season.
And not only that, Kansas City still has to – they still have to host Denver.
Yeah. All right, let's look at the NFC. Chicago, the number one – the Chicago who? Did they get a new franchise? 2, the Rams. 3, Philly. 4, Tampa Bay. Your wild cards are Seattle, Green Bay, and San Francisco. In the hunt, realistically, are Detroit, Dallas, and Carolina. So – out of those top seven, Chicago, Rams, Eagles, Bucks, Seahawks, Packers, 49ers, who drops out and does not make the playoffs in the NFC?
Packers.
I could see that, too. I'm not sure the Niners will do it. I think those are the two most vulnerable ones, but I wouldn't be completely surprised for the Panthers to get Tampa Bay and win that division.
It's the best of the worst, but at the same time, Carolina is that scrappy team, especially late. If you are in a position where you're fighting for a wild card spot, Carolina is not the team you want to play this time of year. San Francisco isn't either, and that made me puke in my mouth.
Yeah,
but go look at what. This is what they're capable of with a healthy Christian McCaffrey. He's back to playing like CMC.
Yeah.
He's not MVP level, but he's back to playing elite football. So the Niners are scary and in a wild card spot. Seattle is very concerning in a wild card spot with their defense and JSN just being an absolute beast this year. But if I'm picking anybody I think could fall out, it's the Green Bay Packers. Something about that offense just bothers. I don't know. December Jordan Love bothers
It's me. Their inconsistency. You know, it's how they can look like world beaters on 1 week and then go to Cleveland and lose in just terrible fashion. So, yeah, I'm going to knock the Packers out of contention also. I also agree with Mike. I think Carolina overcomes Tampa Bay, and I don't think Tampa Bay is going to have the record
to stay in. I mean, because there's only one team coming out of the South, because Seattle and San Francisco both have 9 wins already, you know, so...
And not enough people talk about how strong the NFC West has been this year, 1 through 3.
Yeah, you're going to get 3 teams. You're going to get 3 teams. Yeah, yeah. The West is going to have 3 teams in the playoffs, no doubt. I think that's an absolute mortal lock. Well, that is our look at the NFL. So, Mike, do you have anything else, or should we shut down the show at this point?
I think that's our show this week. We've got some good stuff coming up. So you don't want to miss next week. And I'm Mike Bueller.
I'm Mark Sanders.
And I'm Kyle Roberts.
And you have been listening to the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle.